In those days, the tongue-in-cheek adage was, your check is in the mail.
Yes.
Anyway, let's not speak ill of the dead. I want to stay on their side, because occasionally I need the odd loan. So, sorry if I said anything that prejudices my dreaded score here.
Mark, hi, good morning.
Good morning. You know, it's the 113th day of this year. I bet you didn't know that, eh? So, I mean, we are about 30% through the year. Can you... So it only disproves the axiomatic expression that time flies when you're having fun, because it seems to me that time flies anyway. Okay. So I can't see a whole bunch of fun being had, but time is sure as hell flying, because it's a smaller percentage of your total life every year. Anyway, good morning on that happy note.
No, I know. I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's sort of, do you think time passes more quickly as you get older?
Yeah, it does. It seems that way.
I seem to remember when I was a kid,
yeah,
I spent a lot of time doing absolutely squat.
Yeah, and for those days.
And enjoying it.
Sitting in the garden with sand in front of you,
yeah,
making a pretend highway with a matchbox, and that was enough.
Yeah.
This predates social media, of course. Tim, we better not reveal any more of our age. What can we talk about that's current?
Well, I want to ask you a very important question.
Yeah, go, please. I can't wait.
Are you a success?
Well, you know, you don't have to be a success anymore.
Oh, don't you? Okay.
You can identify as a success. Okay. You don't actually have to be one.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, every time I open the newspaper or any other media and listen to politicians, they identify as successes.
Okay.
And their parties as successes and every other thing. And so, you know, how far does it go? I mean, somewhere, you know, tongue in cheek, I read that some guy won the Tour de France on a motorbike, but he identified as a cyclist. Okay. And so you can be whoever you want. You can be a werewolf if you want, just don't bite people. So I generally kind of go, okay, each to his own when it comes to people identifying, you know, who and what they are, despite the fact that Richard Dawkins, the scientist, says there are only two sexes. What does he know?
Yes.
He's only a bloody scientist. Get out of it. You know, he probably identifies as a scientist as well. But I read yesterday that the chairman of SAA reckons that SAA is in a great place, so great, in fact, that they are going out to seek minority investors, providers of capital, to their ambitious new plans. Now, it's one thing to go and look for capital to redirect the purpose and positioning of SAA. It's quite another to go and ask people to leave it in your hands, but give them your money. Okay, so
right.
I am a success because that's what I said. Okay, to answer your question, we are all able to be successful.
Well, I'm going to identify as somebody who is extremely rich.
Yeah.
Even though there are people in the world who would dispute that, you know, people who operate in institutions called banks, for example.
There's some tragedies, though. You can't identify as hungry. You just are. Okay.
Yes.
And those are some of the things that we're not thinking about. But you mentioned the good old banks. We're not short of them, hey, Tim? What do you think?
I've had a sort of chat with Mike Brown, who's the CEO of Nedbank.
Nedbank. Outgoing.
Yeah. He's leaving at the end of May, and he's been there for, you know, a decade as CEO for, you know, 30 years or so, employing in different capacities and stuff. And we were just, you know, chewing the cud about history, right? And about over a longer term, banking over the long term. But anyway, one of the things that I asked him was, isn't the fact that there are three new banks that have kind of sprung up during your term of office, and one which started before your term of office, which is now has a bigger market cap than yours?
Yeah, Capitec.
yeah, Capitec. So isn't all of that a kind of indictment to not only Nedbank, but also all the other banks in South Africa, all the other established banks? Because obviously there's holes in the market that other people are finding that Nedbank is not. So he's kind of philosophical about this. He says, you know, if you believe in capitalism, if you believe in the dynamism of the market, then there are always going to be competitors. New competitors are going to pop up and try things. Some are going to work, like Capitec. Others, like, you know, African Bank, are not going to work. And it's up to everybody to, you know, do their bit and for established institutions to try and hold their position and so on. So, you know, that's fine. But I still think that South Africa, you know, I just see that Old Mutual's now got a banking license.
Yeah.
And I think that South Africa's got quite a lot of banks. I mean, I just think it's, you know, if you compare it to the number of banks in the UK, the originators of the Industrial Revolution, et cetera, they now have fewer high street banks than South Africa. And their economy, what, 10 times the size, 20 times the size, I'm not sure. But anyway, what do you think? You know more about this than I do.
There are a couple of things. First of all, an argument could be made that the banks don't operate in a competitive environment.
Okay, we're going to start there.
No. I mean, well, that would be my first postulation. And my second one would be that when everyone sort of prices things more or less the same, it's indicative of a uniform understanding of risk, which is mispriced for the banks and the consumers who use their services. Now, I'm talking about non-innovative banking. That is to say, taking deposits and lending money. I mean, banking is way beyond that. And the innovators that go into investment banking and treasury and trading and product design and all of the and structured finance and so on,
that's different,
are welcome to the rewards that they get. But if you take banking in its purest, if I might call it that form, you take deposits from the public and you lend them back to the public or the corporations. And the cost of capital for a bank, 90% of that is determined by the deposit rate,
right,
which is seriously low.
Right.
Okay. And they are allowed, by virtue of their supervision and license, to gear up their equity, kind of roughly speaking, 9 times. Okay. So you can have your balance sheet is 10% equity, 90% deposit, and 100% assets on the other side, which are loans. And so if right. you make a 2% margin on your assets, you make a 20% return on equity, roughly.
Okay.
And so if you then price the risk of your loans with reference to the observed risk of the population and you price along that curve, then your risk is really low because their behavior, as your client base more and more approximates the population at large, is predictable and your reward is high. And so what does that all come down to saying? Banking in its simplest form is quite simple to manage and to risk adjust. And so why wouldn't you go into it? You know, competition should be welcomed, but competition in the observed pricing, relative pricing, is not immediately manifest or obvious to me.
Well, yeah, I always think it's a little bit like petrol stations in South Africa.
Yeah.
Because the margins of petrol are set by government.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, generous.
Yeah.
So if you've got a set margin, which is, you know, sort of dictated by, you know, the market or by government,
yeah.
and that margin is generous,
yeah.
as you say, you know, you're making a mistake not starting a bank.
Yeah.
And I think the flip side of that is also that, you know, the whole world is so freaked out still from the financial crisis of a decade ago that, you know, you can start a serious run on a succession of banks that administratively governments around the world have been kind of quite cautious. And that's what you want, isn't it? I mean, you want regulators who are on your side.
You want conservative regulators, but not to the point that they enable damn near risk-free profits.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you talked about the petrol stations. Well, the government essentially determines the margins in banks
yes.
indirectly by determining the capital adequacy ratios and by determining the money market deposit rate and by determining interest rates and the repo rate. And I mean, this is all centrally determined by central banks around the world. Okay. And that is a given state, wisely, it might be argued, considered and concluded on.
Right.
I think our Reserve Bank is wise and cautious and all of those good things, but it provides a pretty much utility environment where you can have a go.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe we should just be, there should be just more and more banks until they, you know, outdo themselves and real competition emerges. And real competition has emerged. But if you look at the stability of our top five banks, it is out of kilter with the sort of risk environment in which we find ourselves. And part of that, which brings me into another question, is because they selectively choose who to bank. Now, I am not advocating that banks should be compelled, in fact, quite the opposite,
right,
to bank who they don't choose to bank. And I don't think banking services is, you know, a constitutional right, so to speak.
Right.
But if you look at the full circle and you say, well, government is banking the poor. Oh, these are very broad brush statements, okay?
Yes.
And government is protecting the banks who are banking the rich. Then you start going, well, should we stand back from that landscape and go, what is the appropriate financial model for the enablement of growth in a third world or second world, whatever we are, economy? And I think you'll find substantial shifts in the flow of capital if you were to do that. So you asked a short question. Don't you dare ask a short one again.
No. Can I just make one point in favor of South African banks? You know, age has lots of disadvantages, but it has one advantage, and that is that it gives you, you know, personal perspective. And I have to say, you know, the whole process of banking now, partly because of tech and partly because service is just better, because banks are, you know, competing essentially on service, right? The whole experience of banking is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of people who get screwed, and I'm sure there's people who've got complaints, and, you know, I kind of sympathize. But I think generally, as a kind of general rule, the old days when you had to go and take your little check and stand in a queue of 20 people, and like you did at the supermarket, and put your check down, and then 6 weeks later, your check would go into Never Never Land. And then it eventually, you know, rather reluctantly, the bank would actually give you your own money. You know, all of that stuff is gone.
Of course, in those days, the tongue-in-cheek adage was, your check is in the mail.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we can't even use that anymore as a delay tactic. That is Never Never Land. Anyway, let's not speak ill of the dead.
All righty.
Yeah, no, banking, I want to stay on their side because occasionally I need the odd loan, you know.
Yes.
Sorry, what, if I said anything that prejudices my credit score here. Hello.
Let's move on. I think the big local issue is the fact that, and this is, you know, very South African, we have had a triumph of electricity 3 weeks without load shedding. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
And it does invite the question, shouldn't we have an election every single week?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If we have an election all the time.
Well, you know, I hate to say this in advance and skeptically, but I do think we're going to see some consequences of that. In fact, recently, the Charlotte Maseki Hospital ran out of diesel, like yesterday or something. And so the doctors were left there having to sort of use torches and batteries and things to operate until they couldn't charge those anymore. And so I'm not sure whether that was a capacity issue or a breakdown issue. I think there was a substation that dysfunctioned or so on. But, you know, are these dysfunctional or these breakdowns a consequence of lack of maintenance or are they in the normal course? Because that's a necessary service or whatever you call them. And so we're not out of the dark yet, so to speak, Tim. We're not out of the dark. And you know, I'd like to think we're going there, but there are indications that one hears less about an issue close to it, that they enjoy it while it lasts, but it's not the new world yet.
Yes. No, definitely. I mean, what I always think is the electricity providers have got this get out of jail free card in some ways, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Because they've got these peaking generators, which are intended really, which were built really, to provide electricity at the peak moments. Mm. But there's two of them, and if you spend enough money, you can just run them all the time. You know, they are big diesel engines, and they provide an enormous amount of electricity. And if you just close your eyes to how much you are paying for the diesel, so there is that. You know, so I've looked at some of the numbers. It does seem like Eskom is using those sort of peaking power plants quite extensively now, and that would, you know, lead you to conclude that the elections are a factor here.
Well, you know, I mean, again, it goes full circle because the price of diesel is determined by government. Okay. And so government is a key, unavoidable, you know, part of the economy. And it's at that center that we need to get things right. And then everything will have a consequential positive rather than negative effect. But I despair of the confidence in manifestos and election speeches about the past and the future, which seem to, you know, be, you know, borderline delusional drivel, you know. And so
tell us what you really think, Marco. Don't hedge your words in this way.
It makes me angry because people vote
I know.
On what they hear. You know, there's not sufficient And, you know, I'm sort of, we're all kind of sick and tired of just whinging and complaining and criticizing. And yeah, maybe the election is going to finally serve the purpose of laying the foundations for a real solution for the next election. I don't think there's going to be much of a change as a consequence of this one. I'm getting back into my real Mr. Positive, aren't I, this morning?
Yes, yes, yes. If you want something, if you want to look on South Africa's electricity problems generously,
yes,
then you could say the whole process of getting quite a lot of business and private usage off the grid and into renewables is starting to have an incremental effect. You know, that would be the argument that this, what we're seeing now, is the start of a longer-term improvement.
Oh, really? Have you costed it?
No, but...
Have you cost the impact on the retail sector of the expenses that retail places that need fridges and things of that nature have to impute into their input costs now? So yes, it might become more functional, but it won't be more available, Tim. The utility of electricity and other state-controlled functions have a purpose, which is to provide at the lowest possible cost a necessary input to the function and growth of the economy. But to the extent that the private sector substitute that, it comes at a cost which is unacceptable in such a divided, economically divided population. I told you to cheer me up, Tim. This is not working. Okay.
Well, I'm just looking at it from the point of view of people getting electricity.
Now, who's getting electricity?
Forgive me for that mistake.
Who's getting electricity?
Yes, and how and why?
You know, I've got an inverter. You know, I mean, hello. The fact that I've got an inverter is like bragging that we've increased social bonds.
Yes.
No, it's a measurement of failure, not success.
Okay. All right. Let's change the topic completely.
All right. Let's talk about
something else. Okay. Here's my new topic, and it has to do with my number for the week, and it has to do with watches.
Oh, the Vacheron, the multi blah, blah. That one.
Yeah, exactly. So now, which do you think is the best-selling Swiss watch?
Best-selling measure in number of units or money?
Yeah, number of units.
Number of units. The best thing Swiss watch is probably Swatch.
Yeah. In fact, it is not. It is Rolex.
Wow. Number of units sold.
I was just amazed at what an enormous market share Rolex has of all of the Swiss watchmakers. I always thought that Rolex was like a bit old-fashioned.
No. Rolex is...
But the breakdown is that Rolex has 30% of the market, then Cartier, and then Omega, and then Patek Philippe.
You're talking about the upper end of the market. I mean, if Patek Philippe is in that, there are very, very few people who have Patek Philippe's. I mean, real ones.
Okay. Is that so? I don't know, because I have a very nice Timex.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tim, you've just disqualified yourself to even use the word watch in the sentence. Okay. Well, no, let me tell you what's happened in my view is that watches, and Rolex in particular, has become a currency. It's an asset, not a timepiece.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So Rolexes are now a store of wealth, and you can trade in them willy-nilly, and you can put them in a drawer, and pretty much, you know, they have been appreciating substantially above their inherent physical value. And so it's a bit like gold. I mean, what use is gold to you? I mean, you know, in the manufacturing process, obviously, to other people. But to you and I, gold is a useless but worthwhile asset, you know, because it's a store of wealth. Same with Rolex.
Actually, I own an Apple Watch, and I think it's fabulous. I'm glad that I don't have to even think about, you know, watches as a store of value.
Yeah.
I rather think about them as, you know, opportunities to spend an enormous amount of money.
Well, I also have an Apple Watch. Let me recharacterize that. That's okay. Not a watch either. That's a computer.
Right.
Okay. It's a mobile, small computer that you can use to pay your accounts, check your, this is the worst part, it checks on how many steps you take. I mean, I've got enough supervision in my life already without some device on my arm going, stand up. I got two words in response for that, and the second one is off. And then Siri goes, I beg your pardon, what did you say?
Yeah. So,
but Tim, you have covered the full spectrum of watches. Timex on your left arm, and Apple on your right. You've got them covered, man. Hey?
Yeah. All righty. And you said you had a number for us.
I've got a number, and it's very complicated, which I saw somewhere. Okay. Do you know that the Polyphagus lot hole borer beetle. Have you ever heard of such a creature?
I've heard of a borer beetle.
You know what I mean? Don't take shortcuts. It's a borer beetle. Okay.
All right. I haven't heard of that beetle, Mark.
Yeah, so now that, according to an article in the Sunday Times, is going to be responsible for, guess how many trees demise?
Yeah, that's a good question. How many trees are there? Give me a clue here.
No, Tim, this is not, you know, hard to be a millionaire. This is not like we give you incremental opportunities. This is like a once-off and there's no prize.
All right, let's assume that there are 200 billion trees in the world. I would say that this beetle could be...
Why don't you say Joburg? Go South Africa or Joburg. We can't get our minds around the world.
Okay, Joburg. Okay, 10% of the trees. It's going to kill 10% of the trees.
No, that's not an answer. I didn't ask you for a percentage. That's a cop-out, Tim. You won't even make it to the second round of the quiz show with that cop-out. 65 million trees.
That's a lot of trees. I'll grant you that.
That's a lot of trees, but that'll change us from the natural forest that Johannesburg is to the beetle mania that it wishes it was or something. Yeah. Anyway.
So what do they do? Can you get those beetles out of the tree? What do you do with them?
I don't know. I mean, you need a pest to catch a pest. Okay.
I do.
I mean, what are we going to find? We're going to find someone that eats the beetles.
Okay. Okay.
And put them on the trees. That's what we're going to do. We're going to find someone who can't stand the taste of bark, but who
enjoys a beetle.
Drop them out of helicopters onto our tree.
There's got to be something like that.
There must be, man. Yeah. I think a braai would contribute. Yeah.
All right, Mark. Well, I'm glad that even if my topics didn't cheer you up, by the end of our podcast, your smiling, happy self, feeling content and satisfied in that I wasn't even vaguely close.
No, well, Tim, you know, you are my beginning of the week inspiration. That's the motivation that I'm operating on.
Yes.
Okay, next time.
Cool, Mark. Look after yourself.
Thank you. You too, man.